Welcome back, our fellow mobile gamers, to this fifth episode of the Tiny Nimble Podcast, a show all about mobile gaming, hosted by me, Nimble Thor, and my co-host, Tiny Little Games. Now, for this episode, we've got lots of great stuff to get into, and I'm going to give you guys a small teaser here at the beginning, just so we can keep you hooked throughout the entire episode, hopefully, because we'll be talking about the Apple Arcade, which, if you're listening to this episode just as it releases, will go live tomorrow. So we'll dive into that, and we'll also talk a bit about Google's competing subscription service, but then we'll also be talking about new releases that excites us on mobile, the mobile esports scene, and just a whole bunch more, as always. Now, if you're listening on Spotify or some of the other podcasting apps, be sure to leave us a rating if you enjoyed the show. That's much appreciated. And if you're watching on YouTube, let us know in the comments down below this video what you'd like to see us talk about next month. But, Tiny Little Games, as we've done for the past four episodes, how about we kick things off with your righteous recommendation of a mobile game first, and then I'll get into mine afterwards, and then we'll just kind of let the show flow from there on.
Sounds like a plan. Hi there, folks. It's me, Tiny. I'm going to give you my righteous recommendations. My first my only recommendation is going to be Witch Eye. Now, Witch Eye is a premium game. It's a paid game, so it's not free to play. So the real question is Witch Eye worth a buy? I've been waiting to do that rhyme all month long. So yes, it is a paid game.
That's what this podcast is for.
Yeah, it's just all about rhyming and puns.
Exactly.
It's a paid game, like I said, but it's a retro-style platformer. So it's, you know, a side-scrolling platformer. You play as an eyeball. The great thing about it is the control scheme. You slide your finger up, down, diagonal, and it moves the eyeball. You tap the screen to stop the eyeball. You hit enemies. You move around through platforms. You do all this cool stuff. It's super challenging. It's like the classic old-school platforming style, like the Super Nintendo type platformer, very strategic in certain ways. There's boss battles where you have to like see their patterns and try to fight, you know, beat the bosses depending on their pattern. I mean, a boss battle will start out and it would be super hard and challenging, and you're just like, what the heck, I can't beat this boss, and after like four tries you finally beat it, and it just feels so good. If you like pixel art style, it's great. If you like, you know, any type of platformer, old school platformers, you're really going to like it. And I did mention it's a premium game, but the cost is $2.99. And for me, the $2.99 is really worth it, because, you know, we'll see premium games that are like $6.99, $9.99, you know, and you wonder like, is it really worth it? I'm telling you guys, this one is worth it. So this is Witch Eye. I think you guys will really like it. Yeah.
So is it more of an action, like, is it more of a puzzle, I guess I should put it like that? Is it more of a puzzle platformer, or leaning more towards, like, RPG platformer? Like, is there any sort of progression? Do I level things up along the way? Or?
So there's actually no leveling system, and I wouldn't say it's necessarily puzzle, but it's more like, I guess that's a good way of explaining it, because sometimes you're going through a level and you're trying to avoid these obstacles and these traps or whatnot. So it's really skill based, I would say. It's just more about, you know, moving that eyeball where it needs to go, when it needs to go, finding hidden secrets throughout the level for collectibles, stuff like that. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily RPG-ish or even puzzle-ish, because there is no leveling up. Because if anything, the achievement just comes from like beating a level with either super fast, because there's a speed run mode, there's a boss mode, there's, you know, all these different modes.
Cool.
Yeah, you can go through. So I beat the whole game. I want to say it's probably about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. But that was on easy.
Okay.
That was on easy beginner mode. So if you go back and start playing the harder modes, there's like an insane mode. It's going to take you much longer and challenging. It was really the most fun I've had on a mobile platformer in a while. And again, it's not free to play, but at the same time, it's one of those games that you just kind of want to support with, you know, how really good it is. Yeah, so that's Witch Eye.
See, I'm actually thinking the same about sort of my righteous recommendation of the month, because it's a free-to-play game, but I definitely want to support the developers, and there's a very easy way to do that in this game. But the one I picked this month is called Void Tyrant, and it's my pick just because of how fun it is, and then also how unique the gameplay is. So it's a roguelite deck-building RPG with a core gameplay that has taken inspiration from Blackjack. And that in itself I found kind of interesting. So what we've got is this deck of cards in front of us, which has values from 1 to 6. The individual cards either have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 on them. And then we just keep drawing in an attempt to get as close to 12 points in total as possible. And then our opponent, meanwhile, is doing the same thing in sort of a turn-based manner. And then whoever gets the closest to 12 gets to deal damage. And now what then makes this very tricky is that if we go above 12 points, we end up losing that round, and then, you know, the opponent gets to deal damage to us instead, if that made sense. So that's the core combat system, is we have to turn cards until we get as close to 12 as possible. And then that's wrapped in a roguelite setting, which means we have, you know, all the good stuff, like randomly generated levels, an RPG setting as well, which means deck building, item equipment, and, you know, spell gathering, and so on. It's just a nice, great experience altogether, and it's very polished as well. It's published by Armor Games, and I don't know, I guess most of you guys listening probably know Armor Games already. If not, you have lots of great games to get into. They've been around for a very long time, even prior to smartphones even being a thing, publishing on web. Flash Games back in the day used to play lots of Armor Games games. So I definitely want to support these publishers and the indie developer behind the game as well. And it's a free-to-play game, but it has a single in-app purchase coming in at, well, it has multiple in-app purchases, but the most expensive one is coming in at, I believe, $4.99, if I remember correctly. So that's basically the price you'll be paying for the full game. If you buy that in-app purchase, you don't need to buy any of the other ones. And you're not buying in-game currencies, you're just unlocking more parts of the game that you'd otherwise have to watch an incentivized video advertisement to get access to.
I'm looking at the graphics right now, and it looks really, I like the toonie art style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the toonie
art
style.
Yeah, it's very well made.
The first person type, like, perspective, you know, and then your cards are out on, like, a deck or whatnot. I like that. I'm interested in actually playing this game. No, I have not played it.
Oh, so you haven't? Yeah, okay.
No, I didn't know it existed, to be honest.
Nice. See, well, it's a really good one.
Yeah, that's what's nice about, you know, both me and you, we'll be playing different games and we'll talk about them. And then I see a game that you've played maybe on your channel and I'm like, oh, that looks cool. I'm going to play that one and then I'll play it. So it's like, oh,
yeah, that's true.
Void Tyrant. All right.
Yeah. That's my recommendation. So kind of segueing here into the next segment of the show, which this month, I was about to say this week, but maybe eventually we'll get to weekly episodes, fingers crossed. But this next segment this month, we decided to call recent releases and upcoming titles that we're looking forward to. And the first one we actually mentioned in last month's episode as well, and it's Pokemon Masters, which has now, since last month, actually released after getting 5 million pre-registrations, which is pretty impressive in its own right, I think, even though it's a Pokemon game. And it even also got 10 million downloads in just the four first days after it released, which that's just a very large number, even for Nintendo. But they received mixed reviews, though, and I want to talk a bit about that because I actually quite liked the game. Please don't hate me, guys.
But I'm kind of with you in that camp, so we'll be together on this one.
Yeah, and I think you said it so well in the pre-show prior to starting the recording here. You said this is the, what was it you said? This is the most Pokemon RPG.
This is the most Pokemon game. Wait, how did I say it? This is the most Pokemon game that is a Pokemon game on mobile or something like that. Yeah, because it really is. Yeah. It feels, and like you said earlier, there's a lot of people who didn't like it, like those hardcore Pokemon fans from back in the day, like the Game Boy days, who, you know, don't, you know, oh, I was expecting it to be this, you know, and it's not that, like we were talking about.
It's not a mainline Pokemon RPG game. You don't have a strictly turn-based combat system, for example, and you're most likely not going to unlock all of the Pokemon either, because you unlock them through a gacha system, which, I mean, understandably so, is disappointing for people who kind of expected something else.
And you're not even unlocking the Pokemon too, actually. You're unlocking the trainers their Pokemon. No. I have to reiterate that part.
But that's a good point as well.
And like you said, like you said, it's not the traditional turn-based. It does have a semi, I guess I would say, turn-based kind of style, because, you know, you're waiting for your meter to go up, then you're choosing your attack. Meanwhile, the enemy's doing the same. But you said it great, too. Like, you have to pay attention. You can't just, like, walk away from it and expect, you know, your Pokemon to defeat an enemy or something. There's some challenge and strategy to it.
Yeah, especially if you want to really push it. I mean, there's also lots of grinding, though, and for that, there's an auto system, and we will probably get back to talking more about auto systems later in this episode, I think.
Yep.
Generally, I don't like auto systems, but I gotta admit that in this game, I'm somewhat okay with it. And maybe I kind of hate myself a bit for being okay with it. But I've actually been using the auto system quite a bit because I've been playing this game religiously every single day, Pokemon Masters, for the past week or week and a half, maybe nearly 2 weeks at this point. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm playing it somewhat slowly, but my Pokemon are getting close to level 100. I mean, the first one. So I'm getting there.
That's pretty good.
I'm not done with the campaign mission yet, which I know some will say doesn't take long. But I've just, you know, been taking my time, just going through the campaign, going through some of the more grindy aspects of getting enough resources to unlock new abilities and moves for your Pokemon. and so on.
And the graphics are I think the graphics are phenomenal. I think
they look great.
It makes you feel like you're playing, you know, a Pokemon anime at sometimes.
Yeah.
Like the special abilities that you can use for your Pokemon and stuff is really cool.
Yeah, that's really nice. Over the top, but really cool.
Yeah,
just the way I
yeah.
like it, you know, in this type of game. Yeah, and it has been doing really well, by the way. I mean, even despite receiving mixed reviews from both gamers and I think also critics, but it's actually been doing very well. It's the I read it's the best earning Pokemon game on mobile, except of course for Pokemon Go, but like nothing will ever beat Pokemon Go, you know. So at least in the first week, it's the second best Pokemon game in terms of revenue. And that's quite telling. Like, some people must enjoy it. But I guess maybe it also has, you know, maybe it comes down to the gacha unlocking system, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so. I mean, like you said, a lot of people were disappointed in that. I wouldn't say I was disappointed. I mean, I wasn't surprised. I guess I expected it. I figured there would be something there. We've played enough mobile games to know that, hey, you know, you're going to have your free-to-play aspects in it, and gacha is one of them. But the characters you do get from it, you know, they are, you can get some high level characters, you know, but
yeah, exactly. And you actually don't have to unlock all of the Pokemon. I think that's the big thing for me is I've actually just been saving up free gems. Gems is the premium currency in the game, which is what you use to do the gacha pulls. I've just been saving it up, honestly, because I don't even need it at this point. I have around 10,000 gems, which is good for, I think, 30 new Pokemon or 30 new pulls, I should say. So 3 times 10x pulls. In the gacha unlocking system, and I haven't used them yet because I don't need to, so I'm just saving them up. So I guess that's kind of telling, like, you, that's the difference between this game and most other gacha games, in my opinion, is that in Pokemon Masters you don't actually need all the new Pokemon. Now, I do get that being a true Pokemon fan, you probably want all of them.
Yep, the idea is catching them all, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what Pokemon has taught us over the years. You gotta catch them all, right? But maybe, you know, I don't know. Like, I'm okay with it. That's what I'm trying to say. And I actually didn't expect that I would like the game, but it has stuck with me, and I'm still playing it.
So what does a Pokemon ball do when it opens up? It pops, which leads us to our next segment.
I didn't see that segue coming.
Yeah, that's a nice one. I just thought of it off the top of my head.
Go for it then.
So we're going to move along and talk about the latest, another release that recently came out, and that's Gears Pop, the highly somewhat anticipated Gears of War title on mobile, I guess is what we would say. They talked about it at E3, I think, a few years back. But this is definitely Microsoft's attempt at bringing some of their mobile some of their franchises to mobile. So Gears Pop has Gears of War characters, and it's not a cover-based shooter like you would think it would be. Instead, it is a Clash Royale type game. Actually, it is Clash Royale, just with Gears characters.
Yeah, you calling it Clash Royale like was too generous.
That was that was an understatement.
It is Clash Royale.
Yeah,
but just with worse monetization though.
Worse
monetization, or at least monetization that's on the same level and maybe slightly worse, and then just less polished gameplay overall. That's pretty much my take on it.
I think we both did videos for it. I did what I call a rant view, and that just says enough in itself, because I was just very disappointed by it. It's not that I don't like a Clash Royale type game. It's just I feel like we have so many of these type of games out, and that I wasn't expecting this one to be just another one of those games.
No, exactly. I was kind of expecting, I don't know why, but I was kind of expecting more from Microsoft. I guess my thinking was they don't really need to make money. Like, they don't. I get that, of course, they're a company and they want to make money, but they don't have to push it that much. Like, why not, you know, their entrance into mobile gaming, why not make that a good one?
Yeah.
Like, why not get some goodwill in the mobile gaming space first? And, you know, then later on, if you want to, you can, you know, add more monetization. But instead, they just went all in to begin with.
And let's talk about the polishedness of it. You're right. It didn't feel like it felt like a rush job. They wanted to get it out before Gears 5, which it released a few weeks before Gears 5, I feel like. So it's kind of like, it didn't feel like it was, I don't know. It had some bad connection issues, and the graphics on the surface look great, but if you really like look at it like into detail, the graphics aren't the best either.
No, it's not that detailed, and it's just not, it just doesn't work out the way I think they hoped it would. And also, I read this one comment on YouTube, or maybe it was Reddit, but it was someone else saying this, but I'd just like to repeat it because I think it captures it so well. Clash Royale, which is what this game is essentially trying to mimic or compete with, I guess you could say, Clash Royale is hyper polished. Like it's maybe the most polished game on mobile at all. Like even down to, if you play that game and you've played it enough, you don't even actually need to look at the screen anymore, because just from the sounds, each character has a unique sound. So when it spawned, you will know that this is the character that was now spawned in the map. Of course, you do have to look at the screen because you got to figure out where it was placed. But you get my point, hopefully, that even the sound design is polished in Clash Royale. And then you look at Gears Pop, and then what you see is sound design isn't something that they spend a lot of time on. And that's okay. I mean, that's understandable. You can't expect that from every new mobile game. Admittedly, Supercell is the king of mobile gaming, at least in terms of revenue, right? And size of, at least in the Western market. I was thinking about Tencent. Obviously, Tencent is much bigger, but Clash Royale like makes some really high quality games. But my point is, then Gears Pop, even the characters, they don't look that distinct, or they don't look that different from each other, right? At least that's my experience.
And then they both have strategy elements to them, of course, because when you're battling PvP, you want, oh, how do I counteract this person and this and that. But when I'm playing Clash Royale, or when I used to play Clash Royale, you can have like a low level super, like, you know, nobodies, but you can almost defeat somebody because you're using, you know, you're sending out the right troops at the right time. I feel like one, it kind of didn't matter what troops I was sending out almost. It was almost like, well, I'll just send this guy and send this guy and see what happens. And you don't want that in your strategy PvP type game. You don't want it to be to where it doesn't matter who I send out. No, you want it to be, oh, it matters who I send out. And the trickle down of the loot boxes, like the trickle down of the troops you get, is horrendous. Like, yes, there's the wait to unlock, which Clash Royale has that as too with the chest. But I mean, with here, it's like you wait these hours to unlock something and you're getting like, you're just not, it's not worth the wait, I guess, is what it is.
No, you're getting nearly nothing, right?
Yeah, you're getting nearly anything, nothing, yeah.
I guess we should mention though, and this is the one thing I think they did right, and it actually has to do with the loot box mechanic, because if you want to have loot boxes in there, at least in this game, in Gears Pop, you can actually unlock all of them at the same time instead of unlocking one and then having to wait.
I did notice that. Yeah, the timers are going off at the same time.
Exactly. Whereas in Clash Royale, you open one, then you have to, you know, start the next one, but you have to wait, you know, for one to finish before you can start the next one.
Yes.
But yeah, anyway, so that's Gears Pop. Not a whole lot else to say about it, I guess. We're just ranting here at this point. about Microsoft's attempt at a great mobile game, and it didn't succeed.
But attempt and failure.
More interestingly, attempted failure, yeah. But more interestingly, I think I didn't have that high expectations for Gears Pop to begin with, but I had high expectations to Microsoft. And just because they're such a big company. And I also have very high expectations from Nintendo. And then what I read is that Mario Kart Tour, which is releasing very soon, by the way, September 25th, I think is the scheduled release date, will not have real-time multiplayer.
Oh my God!
Why?
Yeah, seriously, dude.
Why on earth? Like, that's the one thing I wanted from Nintendo. That's the one thing I wanted from Mario Kart Tour, and it's the one thing that the other kart racers, because there are other kart racers on mobile already, that's the one thing they don't have, or at least they don't do properly, is real-time multiplayer. And I don't know if it's a rumor, but I read it in a news article, so I'm guessing it's true, because there's no such thing as fake news, of course. but I actually think it's correct, as far as I've understood, that there's not going to be any real-time multiplayer. So how do you feel about that?
I am seriously disappointed in that aspect. It's one of, like, don't know if you just mentioned this, but it's the one thing I was looking forward to. I was, oh my goodness, you know, Mario Kart on your phone. You know, we're going to battle each other. We're going to have races. Me and you can race together, Nimble. Like, stuff like that would be awesome. And to find out that that's not there is just, to me, it's like a huge chunk of that game taken out, you know, of the traditional Mario Kart format. It's a huge disappointment. I mean, unless they're going to do it to where there's like, you know, you have a friends list and they raced and they beat it in this time, but you're competing against their time. But that's not the same as, like you said, real time races against other people. And I cannot imagine that it's a server issue or it's that something like that, because it's 2019. I mean, we can have real time multiplayer on our phones. We have all the time with shooters on our phones. So
exactly. Look at PUBG Mobile, for example. You have 100 people matching against each other. In real time, obviously, and it's a multiplayer game. And I get why a small indie developer, it might be daunting for an indie developer or even a small studio, AAA studio, to implement it properly. But we're talking about Nintendo here.
Yes.
Like, they they've got the money, especially since the Switch launched. I mean, that did really, really well, obviously, the Nintendo Switch. I think it actually outsold, as far as I read, it outsold both the Xbox and the PlayStation last year in the US. So it sold more units.
Sounds than, about right.
Yeah, those other consoles. So anyway, they have lots of money. Even without the Switch, they have lots of money. But they're just not giving us what we want. And I guess, actually, to be honest, as you said, it's not because they can't. It's because they won't. They don't want to do it. And probably because they want us to buy the Switch instead and buy Mario Kart. The real Mario Kart, you know, on the Switch. Yeah. I'm guessing that's why.
And another disappointment that I forgot to mention, actually, in the pre-show that I was kind of reading over because I was looking at screenshots and I was looking at stuff. It looks like it's in portrait mode. Now, I don't know if this is 100% true, right. But if it's...
I think that's right.
Yeah, so to me, I'm like, so I'm having a race car experience, but in portrait mode, and to me, that just doesn't seem right. It should be landscape, unless you can alternate between the two, which I guess is a good option.
I don't think you can.
Yeah, so...
I don't think you can.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm like, portrait mode, I'm like, that to me just takes away a lot of, I guess, the actual real, or the real Mario Kart feel to it. Yeah. You know, are we just sliding with our one finger, you know, and then tapping to shoot stuff, which I guess will work. But I don't know. I feel like that's another missed opportunity, too, is to not have it in the traditional format of how you would play a regular Mario Kart game.
Yeah, but I guess in talking about Pokemon Masters before, I think that's just Nintendo's strategy is make games that are close enough to the mainline games, but not exactly the same, like still missing something so that we want to go buy. The Switch versions. Of those games. And I don't know, it might make financial sense, but at the same time, they're losing out on so much revenue from mobile. But I guess maybe they're making up for that in Switch sales. But yeah, anyway, two disappointments after each other. I want to get to a good one, though. I want to get to something I'm actually excited about.
Let's get to some positivity here, yeah.
Yes, let's get some positivity in here, because I was starting to freeze in here. It's getting really cold and dark. But Rush Wars by Supercell is about to release, hopefully, globally, relatively soon, and question mark, because I don't think we really know yet, but I know it's being beta tested in a few countries, and have you had the chance to play it yet? I haven't.
I have not, and I don't know if it's available in my region. I actually should probably check on that, but it definitely looks like an interesting game.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, whenever Supercell puts out a new game, it becomes a success.
Oh yeah,
but
people
that's
pay
also
attention.
Because they... Exactly, people pay attention, but it's also because they kill most of the titles before they even reach global release. So I guess that's worth mentioning as well. We don't actually know yet if Rush Wars will ever see a global release, but with all the marketing power they've put into the game already, and with the amount of hype, I'm kind of guessing that it will, you know, it will release. But I don't think it has been promised yet that there's going to be a global release.
And what it looks like, it's basically a game where you kind of like build a base almost, or build like a mm-hmm. thing, and then like you have your troops that you send out to attack other bases, and then, you know, people are attacking your base type thing.
I think it's a mix of Clash Royale and then
kinda
Clash
looks
of
like
Clans.
It kind of has that feel of those two games.
It's gonna be interesting. Looking forward to at least trying it. I think it has been received somewhat well so far, is how I read it, at least, and when I watch videos about it from people who are fortunate enough to live in a country where it has actually released.
Probably Australia. No.
Probably.
it's always Australia. Australians. Yeah, they always get it first. Well, honestly,
and they get the kangaroos. Yeah. And they get the kangaroos.
Yes.
I mean, isn't the kangaroo the most awesome animal ever?
It's one of the animals that can actually beat you up, so...
Exactly.
Well, a lot of animals can, but that one will stand up and really take you down like a boxer.
Yeah, it's a boxing. Yeah, a boxer. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Supercell, though, I did want to bring up, you know, I always like to, like, I don't bash on Supercell, but I always like to go over the top with them because, you know, everyone loves them so much, you know, and Clash Royale and all this stuff. And I do like their games. And the latest one that came out, was it Brawl Stars? I really enjoyed that game. Like, I actually still have it on my phone. Me and my brother, we actually, if we're hanging out together, we'll sit on the couch and we'll team up together and we'll play Brawl Stars for like an hour or so. And,
nice.
And it just, Supercell games, they just have that, I don't know, that extra polish, like you said, that extra just something about them that just keeps you engaged. So I'm really looking forward to this one, and I'm hoping it has that same appeal to it.
Yeah, I hope so as well. Yeah. Yeah. And talking about polish, you know, there's a certain... I'm segueing here to the next to
Man,
the next
we're
segment.
Just, because, we're full of segues today, aren't we?
Yeah, we're full of segues today. It's the show of segues, the segue show. Oh, yeah. You can sponsor it, by the way, by Segway. Anyway,
by Segway.
Actually, no pun intended. Yeah. But anyway, so talking about a genre of games that are just very rarely polished on mobile, and that's, you know, 3D MMORPGs. That's what I want to talk about, because Perfect World Mobile released very, very recently, a few weeks back, and that is, of course, based on a PC MMORPG that's either, I think, 12 or 14 years old at this point. And a lot of people were looking forward to the mobile release, as they always are. I mean, every MMORPG fan is looking for an actual great 3D MMORPG. And I know you mentioned that you like Crusaders of Light, and Crusaders of Light is actually a decent game as well. I mean, I like it as well, but I don't think they're not hitting Bullseye either with Crusaders of Light. Mm-hmm. I feel like 3D MMORPGs could be even better on mobile than Crusaders of Light. But in any case, Perfect World Mobile released recently, and it's basically a Crusaders of Light clone or World of Warcraft clone. And it's just not as polished as I hoped it would be. So I figured we could maybe talk a bit, instead of talking too much about that game, because I don't think you've played it yet, have you? Perfect World Mobile?
Yeah, I have not. I actually was planning on playing it. I was hoping to do a video for it, but like you said, when it comes to MMORPGs on mobile, they have been disappointing lately, and I almost don't want to get into it and be like, oh, this again, you know, and then create another video that's just all negativity. I'm trying to stay away from being so negative, but it's so hard sometimes.
Yeah, because there's so much crap out there.
Yeah, there's so much crap, you know,
it's
you play
the,
a game,
it's just the way
like,
it is.
Yeah,
but
you're like, really?
But that's why I actually figured... Yes, but that's why I actually figured maybe we can talk about the MMORPGs we like instead. I know you said you'd played quite a bit of Crusaders of Light when it released.
I did play when it first released. It was when my channel was getting off the ground. I want to say probably like a year or two ago. I did like a live stream when I was testing out live streams for it, and then I played it a little after. I never did an actual real full video for it. But as my first introduction to the, you know, getting into 3D MMORPGs on mobile, I actually kind of liked it. You have your auto, of course, but I felt like it wasn't as extreme as how they are now going forward. Now it's just like auto quest, auto this, auto fight.
Everything is auto. Right?
Everything like, is just fully auto. Yeah. So as an introduction, I actually kind of enjoyed it. You know, it wasn't that bad, but I do see that there's other ones out there that could be better or could be worse. But I think you've played a lot more MMORPGs like for your channel and whatnot. Which ones do you think are like probably the top tier ones, I would say?
Yeah, so... I'm a bit biased because I've played RuneScape a lot back in the day on PC. And so old school RuneScape released, I think, nearly a year ago at this point, or at least half a year ago or something like that, on mobile. And I honestly think it's the highest quality, not in terms of the graphics, by the way. The graphics don't look that great, but it's the highest quality in terms of gameplay. Yeah, exactly. It's old school. But in terms of gameplay and in terms of polish, because, I mean, polish isn't graphics. Polish is just... I mean, the gameplay can be polished and the art style can be polished. And in the case of RuneScape, both of it is polished, but it's just the art style is not very realistic. I mean, it's an old school art style. But anyway, old school RuneScape, an absolutely amazing game. And even as a free player, you know, the way old school RuneScape monetizes is that you can play as a free player in a smaller world. You play on the same servers, or at least you can play on the same servers as members, but then members have some servers just for themselves as well. But the difference with old school RuneScape and most other 3D MMORPGs, the difference between them is that in old school RuneScape, you don't have different server silos. You know, everyone can play together, so you can just jump from one server to the other. So it's more like an instance, and your character goes across all of the different instances, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's just... I like that aspect of the game that you can always play with all of your friends no matter where they live. And I also like just that there's so much gameplay in it. Like, you can literally play this game for thousands and thousands and thousands of hours. 10,000 hours. Not kidding. Like, you can keep playing the game. And that's why I like it. But I also recently got into kind of the opposite of all of these 3D MMORPGs that have to look great with fancy graphics. Because, by the way, Perfect World Mobile looks amazing. Like, the skills in that game, just like Pokemon Masters, they're just over the top awesome. They look great. But the opposite of that, and I think we're starting to see a move from indies, you know, indie developers, in the other direction, because we've got a game like Curse of Arras, which is being beta tested right now on both Android and on iOS. And it's this top-down 2D MMORPG instead.
Huh.
And it's the exact opposite. It doesn't have the fancy graphics. It has an 8-bit art style. And actually, it monetizes at this point through the developers, the single indie developer, by the way, a single person making this game, the developer's Patreon page. So if you want to support the developer, you can do that on Patreon. And that's a pretty nice way of monetizing a game like this, at least in my opinion, because that means that if he, the developer, decides to start adding pay-to-win mechanics to the game, many of those supporters will probably stop supporting him. Yeah. So it's kind of a good incentive to have that in there. Like, basically, you're supported by the community, and as long as you do what the community wants you to do, you can make a living off of that and hopefully expand the game.
Okay. And I do like that there's somebody, or, you know, that there's people out there who are trying different things that are different when it comes to, like, the MMORPG experiences on mobile. Trying something that's not, like you said, that super duper awesome graphics, you know, with all the auto and all that stuff. Trying things that are, like, a little bit different. Like you said, RuneScape is a good example of how you can achieve a, you know, a great mobile RPG on mobile, basically.
Yeah.
And
But I think No, I do agree. It's a good example, but the thing I feel like it's just such a shame with all these new MMORPGs, those like Curse of Arrows, and there's a couple of other ones as well that are being made by indie studios, is that MMORPG development is just so time-consuming, and it costs so much money that, you know, Curse of Arrows, even though it's a great game, it's very simple. Like, it's very simplistic. For example, you don't even have skills or abilities at this point. You only have a normal attack with whatever weapon you're using. So some might not like that. I realize that and I recognize that, which is why I'm saying I'm kind of frustrated, because those types of games are for a certain group of players. But what about those World of Warcraft players? What are they going to play on mobile, right? Yeah. People who prefer that type of MMORPG experience.
Good point.
Yeah, maybe Crusaders of Light. I guess that's maybe the best one out there. For that subgenre of MMORPG players. Yeah. Anyway, I know about one more upcoming one, actually. I haven't played it yet, though, but I figured we could mention it now. It's called Pearl Abyss. Well, Pearl Abyss is the developer, sorry. It's called Black Desert Online. So it's Pearl Abyss's Black Desert Online game. And that's also another PC game finally coming to mobile. It's 3D as well, 3D MMORPG. Can't say too much about it yet, but if some of you listening are looking into a new 3D MMORPG and you want to play on day one, you should definitely look into Black Desert Online. I think it's set to release this year. So,
that's a popular online on PC. That game is very popular. Black Desert Online.
It's very popular. Yeah, on PC,
and
yep.
I had a friend who was playing it when it first came out a while ago, and he said that the gameplay mechanics are really different compared to others in the genre. How you do certain things and how you level up, like how you can be a fighter and all that good stuff. He had really good things to say about it. So I am curious at the mobile release as well. I'll be keeping an eye on that one too.
Yeah. Maybe that's the one. Maybe that's the one you'll be doing a full video on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe that's the one I'll finally do a full video on.
Yeah.
Okay, so well, it looks like we can move on here. We don't have a good segue for it, but we want to get into...
Oh, man.
I was thinking, believe me, I was thinking real hard. But we definitely want to get into the upcoming release of Apple Arcade and, of course, the eventual release of Google Play Pass. Apple Arcade is set to release September 19th, so by the time this video is out, you'll probably be able to access it or subscribe to it, because what Apple Arcade is, if you guys don't already know, is a subscription service for Apple devices. So for a flat monthly fee of $4.99 a month, you can basically use this with your Mac computers, your ISO mobile devices, and Apple TV as well, and it will sync between all of them. And what it is it's basically a subscription service for Apple and their gaming services. So basically, you'll have access to over 100 new and exclusive games. We'll talk more about that later. With no ads or in-app purchases. So my guess is that the free-to-play games that have in-app purchases, you'll have access to those in-app purchases for free. Well, not necessarily because you are subscribed. But one good thing about it, or I would say one interesting thing about it, is that you can download the games and play them offline. So I'm curious at how that works, because a lot of games you have to be online for. So we'll see how that might just be for the exclusive ones that are premium. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, I'm thinking it's that any of the other games that are like PvP, of course, or anything like that will be online.
Yeah, but I don't think we'll even see that many of those games on the Apple. As far as I've seen so far, it's mostly single player. Most of them were already going to be premium titles, so like single player premium titles. Because the thing is, most premium games aren't online games, because if you want to make an online game, you've got to go free to play these days. That's just the way it is. If you want to do matchmaking, imagine matchmaking 100 people in PUBG Mobile if it was a premium game and you had maybe only 100th of the player base. It would take forever to find a match. Yep. Right? So I think that's how it works with Diablo Arcade, is that the vast majority of the games are just single player games.
Yep. And speaking of single player games, we'll get into some of the exclusives that are announced for Apple Arcade. One of them being Oceanhorn 2, which I am very upset about because I don't have an Apple phone. And I was a big fan of the original Oceanhorn, which is basically like a Zelda-esque type game for mobile.
It's really great.
Oh, it's very premium. Yeah it's a very, and it's very polished. And it is the best Zelda type experience that's not Zelda on mobile, actually. And then another one is Exit the Gungeon, which anybody remembers Enter the Gungeon, old school style shooter. That's going to be a exclusive to Apple Arcade as well. Another game that I was looking forward to playing, but I won't be able to play. My curiosity is, are these exclusive deals like timed exclusives, or are they like just all time exclusives?
I think I read that most of them are timed exclusives.
Ah, okay.
That's how I understood it.
That's a
sigh of relief. Agreed. So most of them, I think, are only 1 year exclusives. So they will only be on Apple Arcade for a year, and then after that, they're free to go. Well, you know, first of all, they're free to be released as a normal premium game on iOS, or they can go to Android if they want to. But I'm in there with you. I mean, I don't like exclusivity in mobile games. Like it's, you know, you said you didn't like Oceanhorn 2 not coming to Android, and it might in the future, but I just think exclusivities, and we talked about this in the pre-show as well, but exclusivities or exclusive titles just they ruin, like, it's very anti-consumer. Yep. It's the thing that caused the entire console war, you know, with Xbox and the PlayStation. And I don't want that to happen in the mobile space. So please, Apple and Google, play
get along. Yeah,
yeah.
Be
friendly. But they most likely won't.
No,
they most likely won't, because Apple, I think I read they're throwing $500 million at the Apple Arcade. Is that, can you confirm that? I think it was $500 million that they were investing. Basically, what they're doing is that they are paying game developers to make their games exclusively available for the Apple Arcade. And in some cases, they're also paying for the development costs, which to me just sounds ridiculous. I mean, how can that be a financially wise business decision in the long term? You can't keep paying for the development of the games. I get that Apple is trying to push the Apple Arcade, and for that they need great games. They need high quality games, at least in their opinion. And I mean, of course, the games have to be high quality, but I think they also think they need exclusive games. And maybe they're right, but I just don't see how it pans out long term. And I don't think the vast majority of mobile gamers will even care about these subscriptions. Maybe I'm saying something that's completely wrong here, but I think when I say vast majority, I'm talking about all the people who are playing, you know, Candy Crush or Clash of Clans or Clash Royale. But I guess the subscription,
super casual.
Exactly. But I guess, but even things like Clash Royale, which is not a casual game, I just think a subscription like this probably isn't for these type of people, because we're talking about old school, you know, classic offline games here. Not that the games are old, but old school, as in like the old premium
style
model.
Yeah, old school style type. Yeah, some single player experiences.
Yeah, and I think Apple is trying to push for that, which I'm all for, by the way. I know lots of people, and myself included, can enjoy, you know, premium titles, and it's the opposite of you know, of lots of in-app purchases and pay-to-win monetization, and for that reason, many people like it, and that's fine, and it's great that Apple is doing something for that group of people, but it feels to me that Apple is trying to push this onto the vast majority of mobile gamers who don't care for that anymore. That's the reason why premium games rarely ever work out on mobile. It's not that I want them to work out, right?
Yeah,
but I'm just looking at the data, and I see there is a reason, and that's because people, like, there's a new audience of gamers these days. And on mobile, you just don't want to pay for your game. You want to play a free-to-play game.
And
like that's the vast majority of players.
Not just pay, but pay monthly, you know, like we've spoken about subscription services before. Yeah. And it's just like, subscription services are, they can be fantastic, but they can also be the demise of certain markets. I mean, they can, it can almost destroy certain things. I mean, let's say Apple Arcade is not successful at all. okay? And let's say a year from now, Apple abandons it. Not saying they will, but let's say they do. And then you have these people who paid all this money and did all this thing, and now they don't have access to it anymore of whatever it was they had access to. And then, you know, and it's, oh, it's just a failed experiment, and then they move on. Because that happens a lot sometimes, you know? You see these people, they go into things. And to me, that's almost a, how do I explain? I've read this somewhere about how everything is digital now, which, of course, is the future. Everything is digital. You don't own actual physical copies of things and music and stuff like that. But a fear is that when these companies, let's say something happens or they give up on it, and then you paid all this money monthly, now you lose access to it. And that's another thing that always in the back of my head, I think about sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. I guess the counter argument is that that's also the case for even for free to play titles or for titles that aren't part of subscription services.
When they don't support the game anymore. Yeah,
exactly. We see mobile games removed all the time. And actually talking about that, have you heard about Game Club? That's a new subscription service as well.
What's this?
But Game Club is interesting because they are basically taking those abandoned games on Android and on iOS, and they are either buying the rights to republish them and develop them and make them compatible with newer Android and iOS devices, or, well, either they're buying up the IP completely or they just get the rights to republish it. But in any case, Game Club basically has developers sitting there making sure the games work on newer devices, and then they're released through the Game Club app or the Game Club service, which is a subscription service where you pay, I think, either $5 or maybe $10 per month, and then you have access to all of these games. And they're all offline playable, just like the Apple Arcade, all offline playable. There are no in-app purchases and so on. But this is not for new games. It's specifically for amazing old games that can sort of preserved through Game Club, through a subscription service. And that's kind of cool. So they're basically doing the opposite of exclusive new titles.
Yeah.
They're looking back and saying, hey, those games that were abandoned, basically, were what Tiny Little Games were afraid of, you know, the tech companies abandoned either their tech or their games in case of game developers, we'll take those and we'll make them accessible again. Kind of like good old games, GOG.com.
Yeah, how they brought back, back the old style PC games.
Exactly. And this is basically GOG, but for mobile, and that's kind of cool. That's a subscription service I can kind of, you know, back. Like, I like that.
I agree. Yeah, that I'm interested in something like that because that's a different take on what we're seeing here, which is subscriptions for new exclusive stuff. Instead, this is subscriptions for those gamers who might have missed out on mobile games from back in the day when mobile was just getting started or certain things like that. Because we hear it all the time with games like Baldur's Gate or something on Android, how it was taken down because they didn't meet certain requirements. I mean, they ended up getting it back up and running again, but cases like that, there's a bunch of different games that are just still not even on these Google or App stores anymore because they don't meet the requirements or something along those lines, or they weren't continually being supported. So that is I'm very interested in something like that. Game Club, huh?
Game Club, yep. But then the question is, what is Google doing? I mean, we've got Game Club, we've got, you know, Apple, and then, of course, there's Google. And they're launching a Google Play Pass as well.
Yep, because Google's going to try to compete, of course, with the Apple Arcade, which is very interesting because Google announced their, what is it, Play Pass, I think, a few months after Apple Arcade? So it kind of makes you wonder, like, were they in a board meeting and they're like, oh, we better do something here. And they're like, okay, Google Play Pass.
We need ideas.
We need ideas. And they're just throwing ideas on board. So it's the same type of service. You pay $4.99 a month. And the release is rumored for October, so that would be a month after Apple Arcade came out. And it's essentially the same type of thing. You pay monthly for these exclusive type games and all that good stuff.
Do we know if they'll be exclusives?
So there's rumors that I was reading in this article that they're maybe exclusives, but then they might just take the premium games that they already have, like, let's say, Stardew Valley or something like that, and implement it in there. I will be honest, it does seem a little bit more half-assed than what our Apple Arcade is doing. Like you said, Apple is throwing money to these developers to get exclusive type games. I don't see Google doing the same exact thing.
No. So there might even, you know, be less use of the Google Play Pass. Although I did read actually that Google Play Pass will also have gaming apps, non-gaming apps, sorry, such as, for example, premium music apps, I think they said, or fitness trackers. So I guess all sorts of premium apps might end up showing up in Google Play Pass. So maybe that's their game. That's what they're targeting. They're targeting a broader audience than just gamers, I guess. Not sure if it will work out. I mean, I guess if I could get Spotify, for example, through premium, you know, if that's what they're talking about in terms of premium music apps, but it's probably not Spotify. It's probably Google's Play Music.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. It's their premium, like you said.
Ooh, actually, it would be interesting though if this is actually bundled with the what's it called? YouTube Premium, right?
YouTube, it's not called Red, YouTube Red or anymore. Yeah, it's not called. Yeah, premium. It's premium.
That would
be
kind
of
cool. So if it's bundled with that, so you get, you know, you basically with that you then have access to, you know, YouTube exclusive content. No advertisements on YouTube, and you have access to basically their Spotify competitor, and you also have access to the Google Play Pass. That would be kind of cool if that's the plan. And it just hit me right now that might actually be their plan. Then I could definitely see that working out.
Yeah,
it's basically like, yeah, just like Amazon, you know, keep adding new advantages. Oh, yeah.
I was just thinking, I was like, okay, and then, you know, you could rent movies on Google as well. Like, what if you can, like, watch some movies or something on there too? Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're going to, like you said, broaden it and make it to where it's just not games, I can definitely see there being some sort of potential in there. So I'm interested. We just don't have enough information, I guess, on what it is that they're going to have in there.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know yet. But I guess, you know, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, closer to
in
release.
October.
Yeah, well, October, they're supposed to have an event talking about, what is it, the Pixel launch and all that good stuff.
Yes.
So I believe that we're going to get more information on that, which I am interested in the Pixel 4 release, honestly, because Tiny Wife needs a new phone. She's sitting with the Galaxy S7 Edge or something that's 4 years old at this point. And we're eyeing the Pixel 4 because it's looking to be an interesting device.
I think it'll be a great device, and I think maybe the Google Play Pass might be the thing we know the least about for Google's upcoming conference, because we know a lot about the Google Pixel 4 already. So there's been so many leaked information about the Pixel 4, and it's looking to be a really great phone. And I mean, for the Apple listeners out there, obviously the iPhone 11 series, like 11 Pro and so on, obviously also just released, and that is looking great as well. I was looking into that, and it seems to be a 20 to 30% increase in GPU and CPU speed. So if you're looking to upgrade and you own an Apple device, I think, you know, the iPhone 11 Pro is probably the obvious upgrade. And if you're on Android, Pixel 4 could be the meaningful upgrade. And if you want to go for something a bit cheaper, the OnePlus 7 Pro, I mentioned this in the last episode as well. Yep. I'm using the OnePlus 7 Pro, and I can still easily recommend that phone. And it's definitely less pricey than the Pixel 4, even though also admittedly it's going to be maybe a year older, but might be a good sort of middle ground if you don't want to go for the expensive Pixel 4 phone. I mean, we don't know the prices yet, but I'm just kind of guessing here, because Pixel devices are typically relatively expensive. Like, they're up there together with the iPhone and Samsung's latest devices.
Yeah, because they're trying to compete in that market. They're trying to compete with those devices, so they're probably going to be priced around the same. This is anywhere between the $700 to $1,000 range, which is funny because I was talking with somebody a few days ago about how back in the day when you're going to get a new mobile phone, you're like, oh yeah, you know, $600 or something. Nowadays, it's like, oh no, $1,000 for the latest device. You're just like, what happened?
Yeah, exactly what happened. But that's where the the OnePlus, I think, is closer to around 700, or at least close to that in price.
That's where you get those other, like we were talking about this too, I think last month. That's where you get those other, I didn't want to say developers, but other companies or whatnot creating their mobile devices and putting them at a price point to where people are going to be like, oh, you know what? I can get the same specs. I can get the same stuff for a reasonable price. And a lot of those times it works out. Like you said, the OnePlus 7 is a great phone. I mean, with the newest releases, let's say it's a little bit behind when it comes to specs, but honestly, those little bit behind specs don't make a big difference. It has to
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it has to be like 2 to 3 years out before those specs start to age. Yeah,
unless you want to get into esports, and that's actually the last topic we should talk about here: mobile esports.
Esports, dude.
Exactly.
Sorry, I just want to say that.
Okay. Well, there you go. That was your 5 seconds of esports fame.
Yeah.
But so this whole discussion that we're about to get into spawned when I read that NetEase is building a $725 million esports arena in Shanghai. Now, this is not only for mobile esports, though. This is just like an esports arena stadium for all sorts of esports. But it's still interesting. They're building an entire arena just for esports. And that kind of spawned, you know, this conversation that we're about to get into about mobile esports, because how is the mobile esports market actually doing? I didn't know that. I don't know if you're into mobile esports.
Honestly, I didn't even realize that there was like a market for mobile esports. Of course, there's an esports market. We've seen it all the time with Overwatch, PUBG, this stuff, you know, the coverage. But when you were talking to me about this in the pre-show, I was looking into it and I'm like, holy moly, there is like, there is a market for this.
Yes. Listen, if you're in for a treat then. And to everyone listening, if you didn't know that there's a market already, there is a market. If you want to play competitive mobile gaming, you can do that. And it's probably, I mean, it's still on the rise, so it's just getting started, but you can already already do that. I mean, we've seen Vainglory, which is a MOBA game, pretty old at this point in terms of like MOBA games on mobile. It's the grand old one, right?
Yeah, it's Vainglory, it's when the MOBAs first started getting on mobile, right? The MOBA
exactly.
type games.
Yeah, obviously not. Yeah, but mobile MOBAs, yes. That's where that started, or really got popular at least. So Vainglory, Clash Royale, Arena of Valor, and PUBG Mobile. All of those games have esports mobile tournaments. And actually, the PUBG Mobile tournament is already with a $2... Wait, not $2. $2 million in prices.
I was like, $2 in prizes? Holy moly, I can buy an in-app purchase with that. Yeah.
Well, maybe not even that.
Yeah,
exactly. But $2 million in prices. Now, obviously, I know that that's nothing in comparison to the PC esports scene. But still, for a mobile game, that's a pretty solid start. And it seems very popular as well. I also read that, because I did some research on this prior to this episode, I read that 2.5 million people actually turned in to watch the ESL Clash Royale League. 2.5 million
That's
people
a big number, yeah.
watching Clash Royale. Yeah. I don't think that was 2.5 million at the final, but throughout the entire tournament, 2.5 million in total. And I still think that's a pretty substantial number and something you can't just ignore that anymore. Like that's a lot of people. Like that's really big.
Yeah, that's right? I think that's, well, for like you said, for mobile, I mean, we're in the mobile market, I guess. What is it? News, or we're kind of in it. But to hear these numbers and to hear that, oh, there's actually an esports market for it, that's huge to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is huge.
It just makes you wonder where it's going to go from here, you know, what's the next big step to get that,
exactly.
to get the mobile esports up and coming.
Because as far as I know, and I might be wrong here, so correct me or correct us in the comments if we are, but I don't think there's a Fortnite mobile tournament yet. And
which is
what's
surprising.
Interesting is, it is surprising, because it's doing so well on PC, but mm-hmm. what's interesting is that there is a PUBG mobile one, and what has happened, and I'm not sure if this is just a correlation or a causation, but PUBG mobile recently broke Fortnite's mobile revenue record on iOS, which is, I mean, that's pretty impressive considering that like Fortnite is a cultural phenomenon at this point, and PUBG Mobile isn't. PUBG Mobile is, quote unquote, just a very popular game.
Yeah,
but Fortnite
it's gone down
is a
over
phenomenon.
The years. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting to me that maybe there's a correlation or causation there. Like maybe because of the attention PUBG Mobile is getting, because of the esports tournament, maybe that's why, you know, they're now breaking Fortnite's revenue records.
I know what it is. I figured it out. PUBG are adults who are playing the game with their credit cards, and Fortnite are the kids playing the game who don't have access to their parents' credit cards. Bam,
or if they do, they have to go through their parents.
Yeah, so. they have to go through their parents to get the credit card information so that they can spend $3,000 on Fortnite. Solved it.
All kidding aside, I think you're right.
I think that might be.
Yeah, I think the audience for PUBG Mobile is slightly older than that of Fortnite.
Yeah, which makes sense. Yeah, I mean, Fortnite is obviously, I don't want to say it's a kid's game, but the way it's marketed with the tuniness and whatnot, I feel like...
At least it's colorful. It's more friendly.
Yes.
Whereas PUBG Mobile is more a bit more dark and gritty and real world-like and maybe not as appealing.
You brought up a good point in the pre-show about, you know, with this whole esports on mobile thing, like you said earlier, where's EA in all of this? Where's like the FIFAs? Where's it? Because I mean, EA, you think they would be hopping on this just like super fast, you know, like flies on manure or something. So I was thinking, so I was just like you said, I was thinking, I was like, yeah, when are they going to go ahead and put their foot in? They might already be working on something in this aspect and we don't even know it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they are. I mean, I would guess that they are, because as you said, I would imagine that they would probably want to squeeze as much money out of this market as early as possible. So yeah, you said it, like FIFA, mobile esports scene, why doesn't that exist? Question mark.
Yep.
Don't they know how to make competitive mobile games? Maybe that's it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could be it too,
Or is this just me bashing EA? That could also be it, and I'm happy about it. I'm not even going to say I'm sorry.
Not even upset. Yeah, I'm not even upset either. I don't even feel bad.
No. But regardless of EA, though, I think mobile esports, at a glance, at least from looking into this prior to the show, it seems to really be on the rise. And I think more and more serious and hardcore mobile games release every year. And because of that, the esports scene also grows because, you know, you're not going to see, obviously, you're not going to see those hyper-casual games turn into competitive games.
Of course,
the games that turn into competitive games are games that are competitive. You know, the games that don't have a lot of pay to win so that you can actually have tournaments in those games. They're skill-based games that you can actually become good at. And outcompete others, obviously. But that's why I think we see the mobile esports scene is on a rise. And I think the Western market where we live in, you know, you in US, in the US and me in Denmark, I think we're actually very far behind. Because if you look at Asia, you know, people are just so much more serious and competitive about mobile gaming.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why they're building the arena in Shanghai, like you said.
Exactly.
that's exactly why. Yeah.
There's a reason why it's not being built in the US or in Germany or, you know, even Denmark, right? There's a reason for that. And it's not because of it's not because people don't play mobile games in those countries, you know, in the US and in Europe, because they do, obviously. I mean, everyone plays mobile games. It's just that we don't play them as competitively as they do in Asia. But I do think that sort of culture will rub off, and I hope that will happen, because I'll just be so much more to talk about then.
Yeah, I agree.
Podcasts and for you podcasts, and me, you know, in our daily videos.
Yeah, and then we could like watch them on like live streams, and we're like, oh, whoa, cool, Clash Royale, esports.
Yep,
that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah, that would be kind of cool. I'm not the esports type of person in general. I don't watch esports too much. But if more mobile games that I actually play
and had enjoy an
esports scene, I would probably watch that. But listen, I think that's pretty much a wrap, isn't it?
I think we
covered most of everything. So in case this is the first episode you've listened to, thank you very much, by the way. But remember that there's already 4 previous episodes waiting for you as well, hint, hint, that you can go listen or watch in case you're on YouTube if you want to. And you can follow both Tiny Little Games and me on YouTube as well under, you know, just searching for Tiny Little Games or searching for Nimblethor. And talking about YouTube, we hope that you will let us know what you thought about the topics covered in this episode. And we're also looking forward to engage with you guys. So if you have any comments whatsoever, just do let us know, and we'll be there, and we'll be listening, and we'll be taking that input, taking that feedback, and then improving for the next episode. So we just, you know, appreciate you guys being here. We've looked at the numbers for this podcast as well, for the audio only version. It seems to be getting more and more traction on Spotify as well, so shout out to those listening on Spotify specifically. Thank you very much, guys. But for now, as I said, hope you just enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you guys in the next month.
Have a good one, everyone.
Have a good one. Bye bye.